Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest, Scott Laip, really, really loves numbers. He grew up in Chico and graduated from Chico High. He then studied mathematics at Stanford and the University of Oregon, and has had a career in math education. As a math testing specialist, Scott Laip has written and edited thousands of math questions. He is now author of a children's reference book about numbers called Number Mania. It covers the numbers from 0 to 100 in a way that's not just for children. Scott Laip, welcome.
Thank you, Nancy. Good to be here.
Now, I mentioned that this is not just for children, although it might appear to be a children's book, but I found it so fascinating that I think other adults will also.
Well, the people in my family keep saying that. We'll see if it's true, but I hope children like it too.
Well, it's somewhat interactive also. For example, when you first open the book, the cover of the book, you've got 100 chart. And what do you suggest people do? And I say children, but adults too. What do you suggest they do with this chart?
Well, that 100 chart is a kind of a standard thing in math education. It's just a nice way to visualize the numbers from 1 to 100 laid out by tens. And they could write on this one, or I think I actually suggested, you know, making more copies of it or finding copies on the internet. And there's lots of things you can do with a 100 chart. You know, filling in numbers, if you fill in all the multiples of 5, you'll get a certain pattern, or all the multiples of 3, you'd see a different pattern. You can also look for maybe multiplication patterns in there slightly.
I thought that was the back page, because
yes,
the front page, 100 chart, and you give the numbers 1 through 100. And then the very back of the book, you have the multiplication table.
Well, that's the time-tested times table that we all grew up with, and it's still a basic math tool and an important thing for kids to get to know. And hopefully it can be fun, too, especially if they've read the rest of the book.
Well, I looked at this chart myself, because now that I have a telephone that has a calculator on it, I don't do things in my head anymore.
Yeah, of
course. And so I thought, I need to review the multiplication table myself. My guest is Scott Laip, and he has written a book, Number Mania, A Visual Exploration of 0 to 100. Now, that word visual is really important, because I don't think you could have presented this book without a lot of illustrations.
Yes. I found a publishing company that was really focused on lots of visual books for kids. So when I saw that publisher, I thought this might be a good one to approach. I've tried in the book to show lots of different ways to think about numbers, and many of them are visual, like diagrams and pictures and stuff. And then also the publishing company found a very good illustrator to liven things up.
Oh, I was so impressed with your illustrator. people might wonder, well, why isn't the illustrator there in the studio? And it's because he's in Madrid.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. So that kind of, I think, explains why with each number you write out words in the first language. You give each number, for example, the number 2, you give us the English word 2, and then the very next language is Spanish, and you say dos. You give a lot of other languages, you give the Roman numeral for that number. So I'm thinking, was it Medina that your illustrator, might as well give his name, Victor Medina, was that the reason you gave Spanish number every time?
No, I mean, that really happened after. It was just because I was choosing the most common languages in this country. So I put English first, and then I put Spanish. And then after that, I
went a little crazy.
Well, a rotation, yes. I tried
Tagalog, Swahili, Mandarin, Babylonian, ancient Greek. You give us, and sometimes it's not letters that we would recognize. There was a symbol, for example, in Babylonian, But then ancient Greek, the number one, you have a little alpha that people might recognize.
Mm-hmm. Basically, I give the way to say each number in four languages, and then I show three ways to write it with different numerals. Always Roman numerals, and then I rotate in other kinds of numeral systems.
Well, I also was fascinated by the fact that you give the Braille symbol for a number, since I mentioned the number one. But I don't know Braille, but it doesn't seem logical to me the way that it is represented, the number one in Braille.
You know, I do not know the history of how they decided what the numbers would be in Braille. I did enjoy having those in there. We only have those for the numbers from 1 through 10, because then after that, each number only gets one page and there's not enough space.
Well, now, right beside the Braille, you give American Sign Language,
mm-hmm.
and that is very logical. Guess what the symbol is, I'm sure listeners, for the number one? You hold up one finger,
right,
your index finger. And then, of course, if you want to know how to say the number two in American Sign Language, you hold up two fingers.
It gets more complicated with bigger numbers.
But, yes.
Yep.
And also, I noticed the American Sign Language for the number three, we would probably here in the United States hold up index finger, middle finger, and ring finger, but other countries hold up thumb, index finger, and middle
right.
finger. So I was fascinated on so many levels.
Oh,
every
great.
Number, I was just glued to the pages.
Well, fantastic.
What you did. Oh, my gosh. And even though I'm a word person, I've always loved words,
mm-hmm.
I think, as much as you love numbers.
Yeah, great.
Since I was a kid. So it might not be a fair question to ask you. It's like asking a parent, which is your favorite child? But I'd like to know what, because I have a lot of favorites, but let's start with one of your favorite numbers.
Well,
Scott.
I have to say 7, which is, I know they've done surveys, and that's the most common favorite number, at least in this country. I don't know about the whole world, but so I'm sort of not that unusual to say 7 is my favorite number. But it is a cool number because it's big enough so that there's something going on there, but it's not so big that you can't sort of see 7 rocks and kind of pretty quickly see what's there.
Well, I mentioned that you give the word for these numbers, English 7, Spanish 7. Then you give the Vietnamese word for the number 7.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Roman numeral that I think most people do because Super Bowls are numbered in Roman letters.
Right.
And so the Roman representation for that is a V with two I's, so to speak. Then the Cherokee way of saying 7, I never saw letters like that, if they're called even letters. And then the Egyptian way of representing the number 7.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that seems logical. You have 4 lines and then 3 lines,
right.
7.
Right.
So what else fascinated you about this number 7?
Well, that's a good question. I've always loved arranging objects to make patterns, so I have some of that in the book. And every number can, if you have 7 dots or any number of dots, you can make lots of different interesting arrangements of those dots. I like 7 because you can make a hexagon with 1 in the middle and 6 around to make a hexagon. That's one little thing I like about 7. Why else do I like
something
it?
Something else about these polygons, when mm-hmm. you have a 7-sided figure, for example, or called a heptagon, but they're not always symmetrical. For example, a couple of these that represent the number 7 are symmetrical, but then you'll also give us a kind of a crazy 7-sided figure that, where did that come from? But I think that would encourage children to maybe make up their own 7-sided figure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think so?
I would hope so. And in fact, something that I wish I'd said more of in the book, and maybe when there's a second printing, I'll stick this in there. I'd it seems like a great thing to maybe do in a classroom or at home with kids would be to expand on what's in this book and do some of the same things. Like I could imagine a parent saying to a kid, can you think of some other shapes that have 7 sides? Let's draw some. And throughout the book, there's many things that, for instance, I give lots of real-world facts about each number, which we'll probably talk about a little bit, but it'd be interesting to have a kid maybe write their own facts, like, you know, whatever seven means to them. Like
their house number on the street where they live. Maybe their house is number 77.
Right.
Because that's kind of what you do. Some of the things like, gosh, Scott, where did he get that? Well, now you mentioned that this number seven is considered a lucky number in many cultures. Would you read us a couple of other paragraphs about the number seven on that page? Like the city of
starting,
Rome.
Well, the ancient city of Rome, which is now the capital of Italy, is called the City of Seven Hills because it was originally built on seven hills. However, there are dozens of cities around the world that make the same claim.
So here's a little tidbit you throw in. The kid learns that what the capital of Italy is. Mm-hmm. And even though you're talking about a number, the capital of Rome, the capital of Italy is a city called Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then this other paragraph, what else about the number seven?
Well, the number seven is significant in many religions. In Christianity, there are seven virtues, chastity, temperance, charity, diligence, kindness, patience, and humility. In Reform Judaism, the major holiday of Passover is traditionally celebrated for 7 days. Islamic pilgrims who visit Mecca walk 7 times around the Kaaba. And in Hinduism, the Saptarishi are the 7 sages of ancient India. One more thing is that in Japanese mythology, there are 7 lucky gods.
Oh, and I won't ask you to pronounce all those
I
words.
I would probably not.
But again, that's a lucky number 7.
Right.
So we learn this about the number 7, but also when a kid looks at a rainbow, what might you tell a little kid when they look at the rainbow?
Well, that's an interesting question. Count the color. How many colors are there? I mean, if you're obsessed with numbers like I am, you might ask that question even about a rainbow, not to mention that it's very beautiful. But one of the interesting things might be to count the colors. And it's actually a little tricky to count the colors in a rainbow. But that's why I say here we generally consider there to be 7 colors in a rainbow. But
a couple of those colors are not typical. I mean, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, if I have a box of crayons, I have those colors. But then there are a couple of them you mentioned that aren't as common, indigo and violet.
Right.
So that's the rainbow. And then in music, how does the number 7 play a role in music?
Well, I can't resist saying do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti. I didn't say the do because that's the 8th one.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
Ruined your argument there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if you count the top of the octave, then you get 8. But actually like in Europe, well, here we have A, B, C, D, E, F, G are the musical notes. In Europe, they call them do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this number 7 plays a role in the sky, a rainbow, mm-hmm. in music. And, of course, if the kid looks at the calendar, what is there, 7?
7 days in a week is, kind of a basic part of our daily life.
And many years ago, even when I was a kid, I was wondering about the 7 wonders of the world. I thought, man, I think I'd like to see the 7 wonders of the world. But some of them, what? So what you might mention in this about the number 7, a child learns what the 7 wonders of the ancient world were. And what are they?
Well, there was the Great Pyramid of Giza, which is still around. I think that might be the only one that's still here. Then the Colossus of Rhodes, the Lighthouse of Alexandria, the mausoleum at Halicarnassus, the Temple of Artemis, the statue of Zeus at Olympia, and the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
Yeah, and I remember being puzzled, what are these other things? Because some of them I knew, and I thought, Hanging Gardens of Babylon? And your illustrator, Victor Medina, has illustrated a pyramid, so we assume there's the Pyramid of Giza.
Right.
My guest is Chico author Scott Laip, and he has written a book about numbers. Scott Laip will be at the Chico Barnes & Noble's on Saturday, November 23rd at 1 p.m. for a Storytime book signing. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, mathematician Scott Lape, whose book is Number Mania. Now, something else that I found interesting, because I have a friend who chemistry is his main field, but he's also taught courses in the history of science.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, now, he's an adult that teaches college students, but right. I think he would love your book, because with each number, you include something a chemistry major would like. And what about the number 7?
Well, 7 is the element number 7 is nitrogen. It's the element that has atomic number 7. An atom of nitrogen has 7 protons and 7 electrons, and usually 7 neutrons. The reason it's atomic number 7 is because it has 7 protons in particular, chemically speaking. Nitrogen's a gas that makes up about 78% of our atmosphere, and it's the 4th most abundant element in the human body.
This is author Scott Lape, and he's reading from his book that's a reference book for children, but you can see that about chemistry. The child might need a couple of years. The title of his book is Number Mania, A Visual Exploration of 0 to 100. And on that page, you have the letter N, which is the representation of nitrogen. And I think most people have heard of nitrogen because you mentioned there it makes up about 78% of the Earth's atmosphere and the 4th most abundant element in our human body. So that's a familiar nitrogen. Yeah, I've heard of nitrogen.
Uh-huh.
But some of these elements, I thought, my gosh, a few years ago, lithium, what's lithium?
Right.
I don't care about lithium.
Right.
Oh, but now, a lot of these elements now that are used in our modern technology.
That's right, yeah.
I was shocked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun to research each element and find out what it's used for, and most of them do have lots of uses.
Yeah, that's something my parents, if they studied chemistry, they wouldn't have had all the technology that we have today where we need these obscure elements.
That's right. That's an interesting thought.
Oh, my goodness. So, you mentioned 7 is one of your favorite numbers. What's another of your favorite numbers?
Well, we could maybe talk about 30.
Okay.
If we want to go up higher.
Oh, we can jump around if we want to.
Yes, they don't always have to go in order. Yeah, 30, I kind of thought about talking about 30 and 31 because they're right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you might think they're very similar numbers, and they are if you just think of them as counting things. 30 and 31 is not that different, but in some ways they're very different. Like mathematically speaking, 31, I'm skipping up to 31 now. 31 is a prime number. So.
Now, which one do you want to take first, okay. 30 or 31?
All right, I'll talk about 30.
Okay.
30 is a number that can be divided into many different equal parts. I mean, you can divide 30 in half, so you have 15 and 15. You can divide it in 3. I mean, it's divisible by 3, 10 plus 10 plus 10. It's also divisible by 5 or 6.
And you have a chart representing what you're just saying.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I tried to include some interesting math facts that could, you know, as kids get older, they can learn, read about those math facts, and those can really come in handy as you do math later. Kind of, you know, hopefully having some of this stuff sink into the kids' brains over time as they look at this book. And if you kind of have an instinct or innate feeling about each number, it will help you do math as you get older. So, you know, I have a math education sort of goal with this book.
Well, the fact that I love words so much, I'm always looking at when this little square that says say it and write it. So English, 30, Spanish, 30. Most people know that. Then you get Portuguese, word for it, 30. The Roman numerals, 3 X's. I think most people would probably be familiar with that. Then you give Egyptian, how to write this number 30 in Egyptian.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to kind of make sense. You have three that look like
upside down U's, kind of, or horseshoes.
Three of them. Mm-hmm. Sound like horseshoes. And then this is something, because I played tennis all my youth, and people say, but that scoring in tennis is so crazy. So how do tennis players use that number?
Well, if you're a tennis player, you know that the first point you score is 15, and then the second point is 30. So if I've scored two and you've scored one, I'm ahead 30-15. It's just sort of an odd – it goes up 15, 30, and then 40. It doesn't even go up –
yeah,
you know, at the same rate.
And being the lover of words like I do, in tennis we say if you have zero, it's L-O-V-E from the round egg in French. So love sounds like English speakers, oh, it sounds like love. Are they saying love? And they're really saying zero because it's an egg. And you have a little kitty cat there. And what's that kitty cat doing with the number 30?
Well, it's a great illustration by Victor Medina, just showing a cat smiling, and you can see the cat's teeth. And the reason he drew it that way is because the fact that I list there is that adult cats usually have 30 teeth.
So maybe the little kid will call his kitty over and say, "Here, kitty, let me count your teeth." Now, here's another atomic number, 30, represents a chemical element that I think most people will have heard of. And what's that?
That's zinc. Yes, so zinc, it says here, is commonly used as a protective coating on iron or steel, which we may have heard about that somewhere along the line. It's also a component of metal alloys that have many uses, including communication equipment, hardware, and musical instruments.
Yeah, now that I wouldn't have thought of. Zinc in my old saxophone that I had?
I think maybe it's zinc-plated, like, guitar strings or something. I'm just guessing. Or strings probably might have zinc plating.
And then also we consume.
Yes, zinc, as many of us know, is an important diet element. You can get zinc supplements. And I list here that oysters have lots of zinc.
Yeah, I know.
Just in case you like oysters.
And your illustrator, Victor, drew a little oyster there, but I think I'd rather get my zinc some other way. So you said you kind of like the pairing of the number 30 and the number 31. And what do you like about the number 31, Scott?
Well, 31 is a prime number, so, you know, even though it's only one more than 30, it's very different in a mathematical way, because you can't divide 31 into equal parts no matter what you do. And the way to find that out is basically if you have 31 marbles, if you have 30 marbles, you can divide them into 5 equal piles or 3 equal piles or 10
equal piles. Each kid can get an equal number of marbles.
Right. With 31, that can't happen. You can't, there's no way to divide 31 marbles into equal piles. And that's why it's a prime number. So,
now, I was also, again, being interested in words. You give the English and the Spanish for 31. You also give the Arabic, how to say the word 30, and the number 31 in Arabic, how to say it in Korean. And, of course, in Roman, now that's like the number 30. You just add a letter I and you get 31.
Yeah, that one makes sense.
But you also give how to write it in ancient Greek
and
in Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say Chinese. I'm guessing all of them, the Mandarin, because there are a lot of dialects of Chinese. So I'm guessing that symbol is, it even uses what looks like a letter plus, three lines plus one line.
I think those are Chinese numerals, so I suspect they would, you know, whether you are a speaker of Mandarin or a speaker of Cantonese, you would probably recognize those. And
you also give some a French slang expression that uses 31 in French. And you tell us what a polygon with 31 sides is called. Do you want to pronounce that?
Yeah, a polygon with 31 sides is called a triacontahenagon.
Well, now, an easier place you'll find the number 31, if you look on your wall at home, you probably have a calendar.
Yeah, we all learned that rhyme about which months have 31 days, January, March, May, July, August, October, and December. each have 31 days.
Yeah, 30 days, half September.
Right.
So that's how we can remember how many days.
Right.
Now, you also tell us that the chemical element is represented by the capital G-A.
Mm-hmm.
And this was not an element I was familiar with. So tell us why we should appreciate gallium.
Gallium. Well, it's interesting because it's a metal that's liquid above 85 degrees Fahrenheit. So 85 is still kind of hot, but like for Chico, that's not,
not
uncommon.
Very hot. Yeah.
So if you had gallium in your house, it would be liquid above during the summer in Chico. There's not very many liquid, you know, metals that are liquid
at 85 degrees.
At room temperature. Mercury,
Fahrenheit.
Of course, is like that.
Yeah. That came to my mind also.
Right.
I thought of mercury. And you say it is sometimes used in high temperature thermometers, like we usually use mercury.
Mm-hmm.
But it is mainly used. How is it mainly used?
Well, in the electronics industry, there's many applications. For instance, televisions and cell phones.
So our cell phone, our televisions use this strange chemical element that we probably never heard of, gallium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. There's a lot of, over 100 elements, and most of us have never heard of a lot of them.
Yeah, in fact, I think when I studied chemistry many years ago, there weren't even that many elements on the chart. Our chart didn't have that many elements.
They've added a few, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what's another of your favorite numbers, Scott?
Well, I wanted to say about 31, I thought this was funny. There's a city in Tennessee that has streets with a speed limit of 31 miles an hour. I thought that
I
was funny.
I wonder why they did that. A lot of states have cities with numbers, with names for numbers of the cities or towns that have numbers.
Oh, right. There's a town called 16 and, towns with, yes.
You know what? One of my favorite, I have a lot of favorites
great.
I was reading your book. And I think the number 6 is one of your favorites. Mm-hmm. So tell me, why is 6 one of your favorite numbers, Scott?
Well, I think maybe like most people, I'm especially interested by the smaller numbers because of those are the ones that, we can really sort of grasp intuitively. So
from the time we're in kindergarten.
Yeah, right. We learn them right from the beginning and we can really.
Or if you learn another language, you might not know another word in the whole language, but we can probably count or know the numbers.
That's right. It's like the first thing you learn in another language. Yeah. Yeah. 6 is, you see things that come in sixes all around you, like at the grocery store, I said a half dozen eggs, things come in six packs. It's a number that we just see wherever we look. And
this is an example of how when I was reading your book, it took me a long time because I read the sentence, quartz crystals are shaped like hexagons, shapes with six sides. So off I went to find what I did with my crystal so I could count the sides on the crystals for myself. That'll help me remember it. Now, when you write out these words too, 6, says, you give the Arabic for the number 6, you give the Armenian, the Roman numeral, but Mayan, you give the Mayan representation of the number 6. How did you get this information, Scott?
Well, there was a lot of research involved for sure. And of course, some sources don't always agree. Mm-hmm. The Mayan numerals are pretty well known, and you could find lots of sources that show you the Mayan numerals. Yes, there was definitely a lot of research, mostly on the internet, although I bought as many books as I could find about numbers.
Because a lot of people don't trust it. You Google something, maybe that's true or not.
Well, that's true. I mean, you might find something on the internet, but then when you dig into, is it really true?
Yeah.
It turns out maybe it isn't. Yeah.
My guest is Scott Lape, and we're talking about his book, Number Mania, A Visual Exploration of 0 to 100. And we were just talking about the number 6. And why did the ancient Greeks consider 6 a perfect number?
I like that question. There's not very many perfect numbers, but they called it a perfect number because if you take all the numbers that go evenly into 6, or in other words, its factors, that's 1, 2, and 3. 6 can be divided evenly by 1, 2, and 3, not by 4 or 5. So if you add up 1 plus 2 plus 3, you get 6. And that's why they called it a perfect number.
Well, it seems like there would be a lot of numbers that would be perfect.
It's only the next one is 28. So it doesn't happen very often.
You also mentioned the I Ching, an ancient Chinese book used for fortune telling. And why would you mention that with the number 6?
Well, the hexagrams are diagrams that are found in the I Ching, and they're made by arranging 6 lines on top of each other, and then some of the lines, each line is either a solid line or a broken line. And
now here's where it would help if the listener had a copy of your book, because I think it's hard for them to, what is he describing? I think that might be hard to visualize, but
right.
Of course your illustrator shows exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
Well, something that I like about the number 6 is I happen to be a Francophile. And France is often referred to as l'hexagone, the hexagon.
Oh, because of the shape of the country?
Absolutely. France is shaped like a hexagon. And so if you're in France, you'll see, hear it come up often, l'hexagon, the hexagon. And also, you often mentioned the numbers you see on license plates.
Mm-hmm.
So that also brought to mind, oh, yeah, you can tell if a car is from Paris because it has the number 75 on its license plate.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But you don't mention that one. You mentioned the fact that Istanbul, you can tell if a car in Turkey is from Istanbul because it'll have the number 34 on its license plate. So that, I think people will start being more aware now if they travel. Oh, what number is that? That must be Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Or that number 34, Scott told me that was Istanbul.
Yep.
So that was one reason I was rather fond of the number 6.
Yeah, for sure.
And you often mention the alphabets in your languages. And I kept reading. I was reading and reading and reading your book because I have a favorite alphabet.
Oh.
And you didn't mention it, even though it's used to write about 120 or more languages use this alphabet. And I have a T-shirt that your alma mater is top. It says Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And then the letters in the Devanagari script that spell out Stanford. So you mentioned you might do another book. So I'm hoping, okay, in the next book, he's going to mention that the number 6 can represent France and that and that a favorite alphabet, because it matches the sound so well, is the Devanagari script that is used in Sanskrit. So that's what I'm hoping in your next book, Scott.
Uh-huh.
I'll put in a vote
okay.
for that.
Well, it's a beautiful T-shirt.
Thank you. Another thing that I liked about your book is that, speaking of other languages, now, supposedly in the UK, they speak English.
Right.
But not all of it would be understood. For example, I remember you encounter somebody whose first language is English, and they talk about, well, I lost 2 stones doing whatever, walking
right.
this pilgrimage. So people might, what, a stone?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, a kid reading this book, what's a stone?
Uh-huh.
So what is a stone?
I believe it's 14 pounds. Yes.
Yeah, that's what you say in your book.
So, I don't know everything in my own book.
Well, a stone is 14 pounds. Now, there's also, speaking of the UK, their money system is so, well, to me, it seems really crazy and complicated. And so you kind of sort that out for us. Do you remember what you said about a shilling and a guinea? What strange names.
Well, it's you know, of course, that's not true anymore in England. They've changed their money system, which I kind of think is, in a way, a bit of a loss because I like numbers. I mean, you know, most people like the metric system because it's all tens.
Yes,
I mean, there's 10 centimeters, 10 whatever, 100 centimeters a meter. But I kind of like the fact that ours has 12. There's 3 feet in a yard. There's 12 inches. It's a little, throws a little variety in there.
After a break, Scott Lape and I will continue our conversation about numbers. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Scott Lape, who has written a book about numbers, supposedly for children, but adults are going to love it too. I noticed when I mentioned the shilling, you opened your book to the number 20, and I know why you did that, but tell the listeners, why did you open the book to number 20 when I said the word shilling?
Well, I guess the system of British money changed in 1971, but before that, there were 20 shillings in 1 pound. And of course, if you read British literature, they're always talking about shillings, you know.
Yeah.
And then they talk about guineas, which is very confusing. I'm not sure if I put that in here.
Yeah, you did. You said 1 guinea is the equivalent of 21 shillings. So 21 shillings is called a guinea, or was. And then this word groat. Now, there's a really weird word.
Oh, a groat.
1 shilling. You remember telling us that 1 shilling equals 3 groats?
That is definitely a one you don't hear anymore. But
no.
Yeah.
So if you have 1 shilling, you have 63 groats.
Right.
But I did ask you about the shilling when you were discussing the number 20.
Right.
Now, something interesting, too, you tell us about the number 8. And I don't know if it's one of your favorites, but
I thought
it was interesting that the Beijing Olympics zeroed in on the number 8. Why did the number 8 come up with the Beijing Olympics?
Well, 8 is considered a lucky number in Chinese culture. A child who's born on 8-8 is considered to be an auspicious thing. So at the 2008 Olympic Games, they started the opening ceremony at 8 p.m. on 8-8-0-8. You know, kind of fun fact.
Yeah, that they would start the Olympics that way. Now, speaking of measurements, like a track, I was asking a friend because I had to share some of this stuff. I thought it was so interesting.
So I asked a neighbor,
I said, do you know what a furlong is? And I was shocked that he had an idea of what it was.
Mm.
And do you remember what a furlong is?
Yeah, there are 8 furlongs in a mile, and it's still referred to a lot in horse racing, which may be
My friend happened to have gone in the past to the Kentucky Derby.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, that's why he's heard of a furlong. I mean, I think a lot of people have heard of a furlong.
Right.
But I had no clue. How long is a furlong? And I learned in your book.
Yeah.
How many yards? Do you remember how many yards?
It's 220 yards, yeah.
220 yards in a furlong. So that's another little bit of information that might or might not come up. Now, you mentioned, too, how many letters are in alphabet. And, for example, I've always thought we took this alphabet from the Romans, and it just doesn't fit our language.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough letters in our alphabet to match the sounds that we need.
Mm-hmm.
So did you have a favorite when you were putting together your book? Did you have a favorite alphabet?
Well, I think the Hawaiian alphabet is pretty cool.
Oh, yes. And why? I thought so, too.
I think it has 13 letters. I think I always used to hear that it had 12 letters, but the little asterisk, or not asterisk, apostrophe
yeah.
that is called the okina, counts as a letter in the Hawaiian alphabet. So like in Hawaiian, when you write the word Hawaii, there's actually a little apostrophe in there, which is actually called an okina. Or Okina. I'm not sure how to say it.
Well, I never thought of that little apostrophe as a letter of their alphabet.
Uh-huh.
But they get by with very few letters.
Right.
Lots of vowel sounds.
Yeah, yeah,
so
great.
I thought that was fascinating about Hawaiian. And I also hadn't thought about how many letters in the Spanish alphabet. I thought, same as English.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered, well, what's that extra letter in Spanish?
Is it 27 in Spanish?
The ñe. The little N with a tilde over it is considered a separate letter in Spanish.
Right, right.
So, yeah. So I thought that was fascinating. And, for example, when you tell us about the number 85, I thought, and here's the illustrator would come in handy here. He has illustrated a tie.
Oh,
why
yeah.
would he have? Because people really, I mean, how many men wear ties anymore? Scott,
right.
you're not wearing a tie. So why did your illustrator show us a tie?
Well, here's a math connection. In the 90s, two mathematicians wrote an official mathematical paper proving that there are 85 ways to tie a tie.
And I was trying to think, well, if I were going to tie a tie, I might be able to come up with one, maybe two.
Yeah.
But 85 ways to tie a tie.
Some of them are probably not very practical. But
well, yeah, I would think that too. Another time when I'm reading your book, so I'm lying in bed reading your book, and I come to the number 19.
Mm.
And I thought, 19, that's not, why do I need 19? I climbed out of bed, and you know where I went. You probably know where I went.
The bathroom sink?
Yes. And I looked in the floor of my shower specifically and thought, oh, my goodness, I've seen that shower drain for so many years,
mm-hmm.
but I never thought of it mathematically. So why would somebody want to go look at their drain when they're reading your book, Scott?
Well, like I said, the number 7, you can arrange 7 things to make a nice hexagon. Well, you can do that with 19 also. So if you look at a tub drain or a sink drain, you will often see 19 holes arranged to make a hexagon. I always get a kick out of that.
So there I am, down on my hands and knees, counting the holes in my shower drain. Thanks to you, Scott. Well, what are some of your other favorite letters? Because I've been telling you what my favorites. I had a lot of favorite things in your book, but what's another one of yours?
Well, I don't know. I mentioned 60. 60 is another number that you can divide by lots of things. It has many factors. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 all divide evenly into 60.
So you mentioned marbles earlier. So if there's several kids playing marbles, they can divide them up equally.
Right.
Or a brother and sister or siblings can divide things equally.
Right.
If they use that number.
That's probably why this game that I mentioned here uses 60 marbles.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of games that a lot of them I never heard of. Gotta say, Scott.
Yeah.
Now, you also tell us, it came up that Spanish has 27 letters in its alphabet,
mm-hmm.
and I assume, well, we've got 26 in our English, we use in English.
Right.
So I just assume Spanish did, too. And you also say the Arabic alphabet has about that same number. By
mm-hmm.
the way, I have a T-shirt with Arabic on it also,
right.
being the word lover that I am. you tell us that there are several languages that have 29 letters, and I never thought about this. You say Turkish, Finnish, Swedish and Danish have 29 letters. And then I thought, well, that makes sense because our alphabet, Romans didn't have a K, so we borrowed a K from Scandinavia. So I could see, yeah, they that makes sense that they would have a few more letters in their alphabet. So that was what I noticed in your letter 26. Do you have anything else that you want to mention, the letter 26?
Well, 26, you said you're a Francophile. I'm a bit of an Italophile.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if that's a word. But I'm going to attempt to say this word. It's the longest word in Italian, and it's precipite volissime volmente. It means it has 26 letters, and it means—
Grazie.
Prego, parli bene. That word means very, very, very quickly. To do something very fast.
My guest is Scott Lape, and he's a Chico author of a book that's a reference book for children, but I think adults will really enjoy it also. And the title is Number Mania, A Visual Exploration of 0 to 100. Now, this is one that I got such a kick out of, but people would, I think, need to write this down. So if you're listening and you're at home, of course, if you're driving, but when you get home, get pencil and paper and write down these numbers. 16, 06, 68, 88, and then a blank, and then 98. So if you're listening, Scott would like for you to figure out what would go in that blank that would make sense. 16, 06, 6888-98. Should we spoil the fun, Scott?
I don't know. It's up to you.
Well, because I did this. When I read that, I followed your hint, and your hint said, look at it upside down. Mm-hmm. So I turned the book upside down, and there was the number that goes in the blank. It made so much sense. So those of you, I think you'll have fun with that. Also, you mentioned model railway, because I have a couple of friends who had model trains, and they were talking about the scale of the model trains.
Oh, uh-huh.
And, gosh, I never knew about model trains, so mm-hmm. I didn't know this. But why do you mention that on the page with 87?
The scale that apparently is used for most model trains is 1 to 87. So
you say that 1 inch on the model train represents 87 inches on a real train.
Right.
So mm-hmm. they're to scale, because I know those little trains are quite expensive. Uh-huh. And I can say, oh, that's why. They're so realistic.
Yeah.
But 87 inches on a real train. So you also mentioned Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Mm-hmm. And how does that come up with the number 87?
Oh, I like that because we've all heard that famous opening line, 47 years ago, our fathers, I'm not sure if I remember much
four
more, but what does that
years,
mean?
Yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so if you know a score is 20, then 47, 4 means 80, and then 7 more, so it's 87.
So there's a number, a word for a number that we don't hear anymore, score.
Right.
There are so many. We have barely scratched the surface. 0 to 100. Look at all the letters. The numbers that we didn't even get to talk about. So, I think people would really enjoy this book, Scott.
Well, that's great. I hope they do. I hope. Yeah, I think kids might enjoy just sort of paging through it and learning things. You know,
with their parents.
Yeah. I hope so.
Again, my guest has been Chico author Scott Lape. His book is Number Mania, A Visual Exploration of 0 to 100. Thank you, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Nancy.
Scott Lape will be at the Chico Barnes & Noble on Saturday, November 23rd at 1 p.m. for a Storytime book signing. And next, we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
The night before. As I sit here contemplating where I've been and how far I've come, I go back to the night before it happened, not knowing the fate of my town. I was happy, content, enjoying all that I possessed, sitting on my deck, looking out at the trees, how beautiful it was to me. I did not know in the morning all that would be gone up in smoke, fire all around me. What would I have done different that night if I only knew? A year later is today. Everything is as if nothing happened. The red sky is replaced by blue. We're celebrating our lives today. The joy of it all, giving thanks that we're still alive. If I only knew the night before.
First Drink, 1978. Our beach cottage was always dirty and hot, with lumpy beds and awning windows. Sounds of ocean and pelicans floated through the screens. Mosquitoes got inside and pattered our arms and legs. You were 11, I was 8. You sat on the bathroom sink, your legs dangling, blue cap from the fishing closet on backwards, your hair long and stiff with salt water. Your eyes big, even in shadow, but your defiance bigger, your grin a volume of secrets. I sat on the closed toilet seat. Through the door, we heard clinks, ice, laughter, the grown-ups from the front porch that faced the beach, the children from the kitchen as they stole beers and pulls of whiskey and then ran out the back door to hide their buzzes in the darkness. You drank from your white can of beer, the medicine cabinet open behind you, filmy glass shelves held in place with rusted iron mounts. Below you, back against the wall, dead ants speckled around an ancient ant bait left over from the summer before. You pretended to be drunk. You smoked a cigarette, so I did too. I hid the nausea. But when I finally sipped my beer because I loved you so much, I winced. I saw you not notice. I saw you move your head, press your ear a breath closer to the window so you could hear our cousins in the backyard, their low brags crooning from beneath the live oak, its branches reaching and reaching. Anna B. Moore.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.